Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour. And today is Wednesday, December 22nd, 2021. I almost said 2022, but that's coming. And we are grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people in using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever encountered in my 47 years of doing therapy. These tools are available absolutely free on the website at whyagain.org. And if you go to that website and click on the Start Here link in the upper left-hand corner, it will take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. The book is titled, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And that chapter of the book contains a narrative description of the primary tool in this work. That tool is called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet. And it's a tool I've been using to great effect for over 17 years to improve the quality of my life and most of my relationships and to turn any negative emotional experience into part of the infallible guidance system that each one of us has been given. And you can also download the actual worksheet process itself. It's a simple PDF file. Download it, print it off, copy it, and use it as often as you'd like. You can also go to your app store and type in the three words, Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness, and you can get access to the completely free and private app that contains the Reality Management Worksheet, an abbreviated version of that worksheet process, and a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. You can also download a whole host of audio files of shows just like this one, where people have been stepped through that worksheet process and or given powerful testimonials about how the application of those tools has improved the quality of their life and relationships. And we hope you do that soon and often because it frequently leads to comments or questions or testimonials. And if you have any of that to share with us, give us a call at 563-999-3581. Call that number and press 1, and we can have a conversation. Today is the 356th day of the year, and this year we have been doing the Course in Miracles workbook lessons. Today's lesson simply reads, Sickness is but another name for sin. And in this work, we're talking about sin having the meaning of being energy that is off the mark. Healing is but another name for God, light, love, and creation. The miracle is thus a call to the Creator. Creator, you promised you would never fail to answer my call, your offspring. Any offspring might make to you. It does not matter where he or she is. It doesn't matter what seems to be his or her problem, nor what he or she believes they have become. They are your offspring, and you will answer them. The miracle reflects your love, and thus it answers them. Your name replaces every thought of error or sin. Your name gives answer to your offspring because a call to your name is but a call to his or her own true nature. So that's the Course in Miracles lesson 356. And we're also doing the Course in Miracles experiment commentary from Pam Grout. And her section 356 is titled, Beam Me Down, Scotty. She quotes someone who said, why do we accept the programming from our youth as the source of all truths? Pam writes, other than the bit about drinking 8 glasses of water, most of what I learned as a kid is limiting and self-defeating. So today I pledge to reinstall the attitudes I had before I learned it was, quote, wrong, close quote, to jump on the bed. And I discard these 6 childhood lessons. Number 1 that I'm discarding is the admonition to wipe that silly grin off your face. And I'm going to replace it with, loosen up, claim you're silly. The second one that I'm going to discard is, be careful. I'm going to replace it with, throw caution to the wind, take risks, fall flat on your face. Rule number 3 I'm going to discard says, don't speak to strangers. I'm going to replace that one with, speak to everyone, speak until there are no strangers. Lesson 4 I'm going to throw out the window. Don't leave the house without clean underwear. I'm going to replace it with, it doesn't matter what kind of underwear or shoes or purse you're wearing. What matters are the dreams written on your heart. Number 5, the rule I'm going to throw out is, stay in line. I'm going to replace that one with, anything is possible, and you're free to adapt any guidelines you choose. There is no line. Number 6, I'm going to throw out the rule that says, always look out for number 1. And I'm going to replace that one with, give everything you've got to everyone you see, no exceptions. That's Pam Grout's lesson 356. Loosen up and claim you're silly. Throw caution to the wind, take risks and fall flat on your face. Speak to everyone until there are no strangers. It doesn't matter what kind of underwear or shoes or purse you're wearing. What matters are the dreams written on your heart. Anything is possible, and you're free to adapt any guidelines you choose, but remember, there is no line. Give everything you've got to everyone you see, no exceptions. So, that's our Course in Miracles lesson and the Pam Grout commentary. What offering would you have for us today? 563-999-3581. If you call that number and press 1, we can have a conversation. How can we support you today? We are getting very near the end of the year. We are only 9 days left in the year, and we have about 48 minutes left on the air in our first hour to take your calls, comments, questions, suggestions for ways to spend this next hour. We had our support group last night, and we did another segment of the Course in Miracles Made Easy presentation that was being given to us by Alan Cohen. And I know I've mentioned this before, but there are currently 3 books that I listen to or read at least once a year. One of them is Awareness by Anthony DeMello. One of them is Course in Miracles Made Easy by Alan Cohen. And the other is The Tao Made Easy by Alan Cohen. And Alan has been studying the Course in Miracles for many, many years, and he has a way. He's one of his gifts is that he can take very complex, deep ideas and situations and make them understandable in common everyday parlance or language. So that was a big part of what we were doing last night, along with introducing some of the newer group members to the concept of how we are the ones creating our own emotions. And it began right at the very beginning of the group when people were just giving updates and somebody was talking about having lost a friend to COVID and describing that friend and saying, you know, I feel very badly because this patient, this friend of mine was very irritating. And I interrupted and said, well, in this group, we don't talk about someone or something outside of us creating irritation. We talk about how each one of us chooses in each new present moment what interpretation we are going to place on our experience of life. And it is that interpretation that either resonates negative emotional states that we brought with us into that moment or creates those negative emotional states. So it would be more accurate to say, when I would talk to this friend on the phone, I would generate a lot of irritation. I would have goals and expectations for her that she wouldn't meet. And then I would choose frustration or irritation or judgment of her in response to what she would say or do. And that was beautifully echoed throughout the conversation with Alan Cohen, because it's part of the core teaching in the Way of Mastery and in the Course in Miracles. We are the architects. We are the creators of our experience of life. And, you know, it's the very first axiom that comes from the Way of Mastery happens, I think it's like on page 4 or 5 of that book. And it says, you don't experience anything that you have not chosen. And that's the first axiom. The idea is this, I forget exactly how many axioms there are, but this Course in Miracles and Way of Mastery is a course in learning how you are actually living your life and constructing your experience of life. And the first axiom on page 5 in the Way of Mastery says, nothing that you experience is caused by anything outside of you. You experience only the effects of your choice. And you might say, well, how could that be? What about those people that just got hit by a hurricane? And what about the people in Kentucky who got tornadoes that did so much devastation? Well, the idea is that if you look at that and think about all of the devastation and all of the sadness, you're going to create one experience. If you look at that and you look at all of the helpers, you'll create another experience. So I was driving home last night. I think the radio show is called 1A. There was a person who'd been down there to report on the devastation in Kentucky and Tennessee and wherever they had all these massive tornadoes last week. And this man kept saying, I can't tell this story enough. I went to this church and I found that they were handing out, you know, these, what I thought were the church members, where they're handing out supplies and water and to these families that had had their homes devastated. And so I went to the minister of this church and I said, you know, who are these, you know, congregants over here? And he said, oh, those aren't congregants. So we went over and interviewed the people that are standing out in the rain handing out bottles of water to families who have lost their homes. And what he found? They had their home wiped out. They were living in a shelter. but they donated their time to help others who had lost everything or lots of what they had. And so here's this reporter who, instead of focusing on all of the devastation and the lost lives, he chose to focus on the power of that compassion, that loving humanity, that even in the face of tremendous personal loss, this family decided to go help others. That's an example, for my mind, of what the Way of Mastery means when it says, you never experience anything you haven't chosen. I'm choosing how to interpret and respond to the life events around me. And how I choose to interpret and respond to them is what creates my experience. If I look for the helpers, I'm always going to find helpers. If I look for things to be sad about, I can always find things to be sad about. So The Course in Miracles and the Way of Mastery are trying to help us understand what it is that we actually do with this creative force that we are given control over. We're given dominion over our own thoughts. And it's what we do with those thoughts that create our experience of life. And if you don't understand that that's what's happening, then you don't have access to the mechanism that can change your life for the better. So that's what we're here to help people question for themselves and learn anew and get better and better at applying in their lives. I'm the one that creates my experience of life in each new present moment, and I do that with the way that I choose to interpret and respond to the events that unfold around me. It is powerful to wake up and recognize that we aren't taught that. I was 45 years old before I had this presented to me this clearly, this directly, with no qualifications and no rationalizations. I had somebody talking to me this morning about getting a visit from her in-laws, and her husband's parents, for whatever reason, whatever the status is in their lives right now, she said, these are the most negative people I've ever had, you know, memory of being around. They just complain about everything. And her husband said to her after they left, you know, do you think it's bad that I don't want to be around them more than once a year? And we were talking about that. We were talking about how when he's around his parents and their intense negativity, he gets very nasty and negative. Her husband gets nasty and negative when he's around his parents. And he's not normally like that. He's normally pleasant and optimistic and loving. So the question becomes, is it just being around his parents that's creating his experience? And the answer in this work and direct observation that we make over and over again with this kind of work is no, it's his choice of how to interpret and respond to that. So if he's with his parents and they start being negative and he thinks they should not be that way, they should be more positive, they should be more loving, they should quit criticizing other people. If he adopts that perspective, that negative critical view of his parents, he's doing exactly what he's accusing them of doing. He's complaining about them. And he's comparing who and what they are in the moment to his hopes or dreams or shoulds about them. And they're never going to stack up to that. And so he creates the experience for himself that says his parents are bad or wrong, they're doing it wrong, they're getting it wrong, they're doing life the wrong way, and they should change. If, on the other hand, he would use a filter like the thought that everyone is doing the best they can in each moment with whatever resources they have, if he would choose that filter to look at his parents and what they're saying and doing, he would create a very different experience for himself. He would see his parents, when they're saying nasty, negative things about other people, he would see his parents through the light that says they are in pain, fear, or sadness, because we understand in this work that nasty, negative, insulting, critical statements can't come out of a person unless there is pain, fear, or sadness in that person. So if he chose that filter when his parents got nasty and negative, his experience would be one of having compassion for his parents. Oh, there are my parents, these poor people, their lives have been so rough. They were raised by people that were so nasty and negative, or they've had so many traumas in their life. Here's a negative effect resonating out of one of my parents because of the traumas in their past or their lack of mature resources and coping skills for dealing with life in this moment or dealing with their pain. Just think about that. I create my experience of someone who's nasty and negative in the moment. And if I hold up a thought that says, everybody should be loving, everybody should be aware that they create their own experience, everybody should be able to smile and send loving thoughts and energy to everyone around them, then when I encounter somebody who's not doing that, what do I create? I create a judgment that says they're bad or they're wrong or they're damaged or they're broken because they're not doing what I think they should. And what do I create in my experience when I live in that energy of judgment? I create tension. I create a host of negative emotions, specific flavor of negative emotion I choose in that moment. I'm creating that. They didn't create that by the expression of their pain, fear, or sadness. I'm creating it. And if I wake up and become aware that I'm the one creating that, and I don't like the experience of it, I can choose again. I can choose differently the next time, in the next instant. So that's what we're hoping to introduce people to, the possibility that there are ways to look at our lives, our life experience, that help us understand how what we choose as interpretations and responses is actually what creates our experience of life in the moment, not these energies that we call the outside events. And it begins right there at the beginning. If I can catch myself, here's this concept that Dr. Michael Rice uses, he calls it responsibility communication, he calls it regulatory speech, that's what it is. If I recognize that every time I let myself think or speak as though this person is irritating me, that situation is traumatic, this situation is overwhelming, that situation is wonderful, this one is tragic. Every time I let myself think or speak that way and I don't catch it and correct it, I keep programming myself to believe that I'm a victim of the outside energies and the people around me. Welcome, Susan.
Hi, Dr. Tim. This is such a great topic. I have two angles, but I want to start, if it's okay, going back to the lesson, sickness is another name for sin, healing is a name for God. The miracle is thus a call to Him. So is the miracle in this case the choice to put the filter on, to choose to see the best in the other person? And is that, I just didn't understand that sentence.
Okay, well, this is one of the things that gets so goofy with the Course in Miracles. The miracle is the actuality of life the way it is. Right?
Okay.
It says the words, the miracle is thus a call to the Creator. But what they're really saying is, there is no sickness. It's just another name for sin, which means energy that's off the mark or a false perception. And the word healing is just another name for all that is, for light, for love, for creation, for seeing life accurately. There's no healing to be done except for the removal of false perception. That is the primary, learning from the Course in Miracles. That, another way that it is stated in the Course in Miracles is that a miracle is simply a choice to move from the perception of fear to the perception of love. And if Michael Rice were here, he might say, the miracle becomes evident to you when you choose the spiritual faculty of true perception. In other words, when you get to see the world as it actually is, then you realize there's no pain, there's no sadness, it's all a false perception that creates our internal experience, but that external actuality doesn't exist in that way. So if you could see your brother and sister as this being of brilliance and light, regardless of what they're saying or doing in the moment, so they're either extending that brilliance and light and that loving energy and creativity, or their actions in the moment can be seen by you as simply a call for help and healing. And if you could see that in each moment, you would not have anger or sadness or frustration or pain or fear in response to anything your brother or sister did.
Okay, go ahead.
I just flashed on the thought of, so here's a healthy parent who was raised by good parents, who is in his or her 20s or 30s when they have a child, and they've got an infant, and that infant is screaming and crying. And that healthy parent looks on that child and says, oh, poor baby, oh, what can I do to help you? What's the matter? How can we fix this? And starts looking in between the parent and the child and in the child's environment for things that might restore calm and peace and either, a full stomach or sleep or a dry diaper or, some maybe clothes that are irritating. The parent starts acknowledging that this screaming and crying coming from this infant is a sign of pain or suffering inside the infant.
Mm-hmm.
Now, likewise, a wounded adult, same age, 20 or 30, male or female, doesn't matter, who was beaten or neglected or attacked when he or she was crying as a child, in that moment can take it personally, can start having thoughts like, what is wrong with you? I just fed you. I just changed you. And they have shaken baby syndrome and all of these other horrible things that happen. Why? Because a wounded person is interacting with another wounded person.
Mm-hmm.
If I have a rage come up in me, and my mind wants to show me a picture of how I am justified in my rage at so-and-so, that's me being wounded, responding to somebody who's acting from their woundedness. And
yeah.
that just perpetuates a system of more woundedness. But no one in that moment is seeing clearly this miracle of life, these two miracles of the creative energy in expression as form that we call human beings. No one is seeing it clearly, and so people aren't responding in that respectful, loving, connected, compassionate way. The miracle is not the call to the creator, but the ability to see creation as it actually is. Right? A miracle is simply awakened perception to the truth of life. So sickness is just another name for energy that's off the mark, and healing is just another name for God, light, love, creation, all that is the way it actually is. When you mm-hmm. perceive creation as it actually is, you will understand there was never any need for healing, nothing was ever broken, and miracles will be the natural flow of life. I mean, these lessons over the past few months have been telling us time and time again, if you perceive actuality, if you perceive life through the Christ mind, you realize there's nothing to change, to fix, to heal. Lesson 352 says, judgment and love are opposites. The flow of life and all that is and all the creative energy is just actually there. Judging it means I'm stepping away from it. Mm. Now I'm not in the flow and I don't get to experience it. I'm comparing it to some mental image that says it should be other than it is. And so now I've created a tension. I've created a sense of separation out of which comes fear. And it's all in that instant of judgment. Well, in order to judge something, I have to perceive myself as separate from it. Can you see that?
I can see
that. Can you see just
yeah.
that much, that in order to judge something, I have to perceive myself as separate from it?
Yeah. Yeah.
So there's the original error, which is this false perception that's based on our limited senses that says, I am separate from you. You and I are different. And in that moment, the next step is either you're better than me or you're worse than me.
Mm-hmm.
And that is not the actuality. Actuality, as Einstein and other physicists point out to us, is that we're all energy and we're all connected. Even as consciousness, we're all connected to the same consciousness. So every time I begin to make a judgment, I had to begin with a false perception that says I'm different than the thing I'm judging. So it is error in thought that leads to the sensations that I experience that I call sickness. And if the error in thought is removed, then I'm just in direct connection with all that is.
My being in direct connection can have a healing effect then on someone who isn't feeling good, for instance. What I'm getting at is, for me to, the story you said about the parents who were, the parents-in-law who were so difficult, I can understand taking that, the stance that, oh, there they are, they've certainly been through a lot. If they're acting this way, they are in pain. I'm going to get specific now. My grandson called me last night on his way, driving for half an hour to get to an AA meeting, and telling me that he had been terribly depressed and he didn't even want to admit it, and he's been painting a false picture about how well he's doing. He said, I've been choosing to be upbeat and to tell people I'm doing well because I want it to be that way. But the fact is, I'm struggling with depression. And so I'm listening to this and feeling as if there's nothing I can do but listen and care for him. But I am separate from him because I'm thinking I can't do anything for him. And I am perceiving him as somebody who's really hurting and in trouble. I'm trying to put this together to step back into the miracle. I'm reminded of a story. Ellen reminded me of it the other day. She said she was talking about, somebody asked her, what if your daughter said she wanted to commit suicide? And Byron Katie said, if my daughter committed suicide, I would know she did the most loving thing she could do toward herself, to take herself out of pain, and I would celebrate that, some version of that. And I'm thinking, whoa, that is so far from anything I could say. I get scared, you know, my favorite miserable. I go into being afraid on behalf of Jacob, fearful, because before when he went into his terrible state and tailspin down, it was, I don't want to live, I don't want to live. Now he's sober, but telling me going to AA meetings is hard because they talk about their addiction. And he said, then I sit there thinking about addiction, and I want to go back on weed, because when I was just on weed with my medical marijuana card, that helped me more than any of these drugs I'm on. I actually wasn't anxious and depressed when I was on weed. Well, I'm not sure that's true either, but I'm going all over the place with this because I'm just trying to apply it right now in my life to be the best help I can for Jacob, and also to just be a healthy grandmother and not go into my thing again. So that, all that said, I don't know where you want to take that, but.
Well, I would take that into this very real thing that I know you had the experience of, because you're a loving grandparent, et cetera. And that very real thing is that we experience the energy of our family and friends.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would just say to you, find whatever you can in any of the tools you've ever been exposed to or new ones you might find that will allow you to be in and hold a loving energy, and then projecting that towards your grandson. And that's along with the things that you do, that you will have conversations with the people you think might be needed to keep him safe, and or having conversations with your grandson himself, etc. But the primary thing is, and you mentioned it again, this your favorite miserable, that you're going into fear.
Yeah.
And you're energetically connected to everyone in your family, but especially your grandsons when things like this happen. And so if you sit there in fear and you're energetically connected to them, how can you rationalize that that's a good thing, that you're somehow helping them by sitting there in fear?
Oh, yeah.
Good. If you can't, then don't. And choose any of the tools, all of the above kinds of tools, to restore yourself to that calm, loving space as soon as possible and as often as possible. And all of the rationalization, go ahead.
That involves having a kind of confidence, an assurance that everything is okay as it is. Everything is going to be okay, but it already is okay. I guess I could say
I'm not going to go there with you. I'm going to suggest that that's not what that means.
Okay.
What it means is that I recognize, as I sit here in fear, I'm not helping.
Oh, yeah.
Now, I may not have control over my grandson and what impact these medications have on him, or whether or not he likes AA meetings, or whether or not he's depressed. I don't have control over his body chemistry and family history and genetics, but I do have the ability to have some impact on my energy state in this moment. And I can sit here in the fear and pour a lot of energy into it and say, woe is me, and oh, my poor grandson, and nothing's helping, and oh, the baby's going over the dam in the little reed basket, and oh my goodness, life is going to end. I could sit here in that energy, or having learned what I've learned so far from the Course in Miracles and the Way of Mastery and EFT tapping and Michael Rice worksheets and targeted journaling and three early memories of conflict, I could pick up tools and move myself into a more loving, peaceful state. And I don't know what impact that's going to have on everything around me. I just know it is going to be better than sitting here in fear. Fear that I generate while I'm busy telling myself that the fear is caused by things outside of me.
Mm-hmm.
So that doesn't require belief that everything is fine and everything's going to work out just perfectly. That doesn't require that. That just requires the understanding, the direct observation, that if I sit here in fear, I'm not helping.
That's good. You're right on it, because what I want to be able to say in all sincerity is everything's going to be okay. And I don't say that because I can't say that. What I do say is something like, all I know from the bottom of my heart is life is wonderful and well worth living. Be gentle with herself. I invoke Tim Hayes. Be gentle with yourself. Give yourself time. I say the good things, and maybe they help. I don't know, but that isn't my concern. You're bringing it right back home, right here, right now, with this person here. And that has to be done. For me, I have to keep doing that. I go out of myself and get scared, and I'm way away from my center when doing that. I can be there with him and let him do what he's doing. That is just hard, but that's what's required. That's the best thing.
Well, it's the only thing. You can't fix him or change him anyway. And the more you focus on him, the less energy you have available to focus on the one thing in this equation that you do have some impact on, which is what's the mind energy you're creating and sending out into this field.
Right. Yep.
Think about the gentleman we were talking about earlier, where his parents come to town, and his wife, they're driving home after spending time with his parents, and he's bitching and moaning about his parents being so negative. What's he doing? He's complaining. What's he complaining about? He's complaining that his parents complain so much.
Right.
And then he has the perspective where he asks his wife, am I like that? So at least, he's got that much perspective where he can step back and ask a question. And then she's able to say, well, the truth is, when they're around, you get very negative.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in that situation, is there anything he can do to change his parents to be less negative? No. Is there something he could do to be more positive and loving within himself? Yes, all kinds of things. That's where his energy is going to be most productively spent. And the same thing for you.
Mm-hmm.
Can you fix or change your grandson or the effects of the medications on him or the impact of the AA meetings on him? No. Do you have the ability, once you become aware that you're sitting there back again in your favorite miserable, do you have the ability to choose differently in that moment? Yes. Do you now have access to a whole series of tools that can help you change your state of mind? Yes. Now the only question left for you is, will you pick those tools up and use them?
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, positively impacting the only thing you've actually got an impact on here.
Mm-hmm. Boy, that's really, really necessary letting go.
Yeah, you're out there chasing, tilting at windmills, right? You're out there saying, this is bad, this is horrible, this is wrong. I would never be able to survive if my grandson did this suicide thing, and I can't believe that Byron Katie would be able to do that and say, where's all that energy getting focused right now in you? On anything that you have control over? No. It's on all of these theoretical, you know, fear-based focuses of attention, and that's not useful to you or your grandson.
Right.
Think about it in this sense. This phrase just popped into my head, and you heard me say this a number of times. Guy Finley says, there is nothing more practical than true spirituality. And what am I calling you to right now? The practical application of your mind energy. Are you going to apply what you've learned and your ability to focus your attention on things that might actually change your energy and mood for the better right now? Or are you going to stay focused on a whole bunch of things you have no control over?
Right.
It's the practicality that makes this so valuable.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact of the matter is, Byron Katie does not know what she would think or feel if her daughter committed suicide. She's hoping that she would feel that her daughter, she would have the thought that her daughter did what was most loving and that she would feel joyful for her daughter about that. But we never know what is going to go on for us, what's going to get resonated from us, from deep inside of us, et cetera. We never know until it happens.
Right, that's true.
So any thoughts of energy, that any mind energy you might spend on comparing yourself to Byron Katie and saying, oh, she's more holy than me, or she's more spiritual than me, or I could never do that, is, again, it's just a waste of your mind energy.
Yeah, that's true.
And I'm calling it a waste because it's in judgment, it's in comparison. And it's it's a waste in the sense that it's focusing on things you've got no control over. It's okay if you want to do that, but it isn't productive. It isn't practically assisting your situation or your grandson's in any way.
Yeah, this reminds me of the talk we had about putting people on pedestals. And in a way, as soon as you're separated from somebody, you've either put them on a pedestal or you've put yourself on a pedestal.
Yes.
So.
Yes.
Well, I went back into the Course in Miracles to read what is sin, and they have a wonderful little treatise about that. I won't go into it, but because that lesson was, it was one of the ones that if I were Pam Grout, I would have said, rip the sucker out, you know. I just didn't want to deal with those words because those words just, it would take a lot of messing around in my brain to understand the miracle is thus a call to him. So thanks for straightening that out so I don't have to rip the whole sucker out. But anyway, I'm going to have a look at the idea of sin again.
And think about the word call there as a leaning into, not a begging or calling for help from someone or something outside of you. It's just getting in connection with the truth of life. I mean, it's a literary use of these words here that says it's a call to him. Well, what does that mean? Hey, God, I need your help. No, it's not that. The Course in Miracles never says that. The Course in Miracles works diligently. Even in this lesson, later on, it says, look, you are him and he is you, and we, and we are all together. Right?
Mm.
Your name, Creator, gives the answer. Your name, your essence, your Shem from the ancient Aramaic, the vibrational energy that makes you you, that's what gives the answer to your offspring. Because to get in touch with your energy is to get in touch with his own energy. Right? They're using the word call here, but it really means to just be aware, be in direct contact with, have true perception of. So if I'm truly perceiving God, light, love, and creation, I'm truly perceiving myself. This was one of the big lessons that Alan Cohen was speaking so clearly to last night. When you clearly perceive the Creator, you clearly perceive yourself. This is a core message from the Course in Miracles and Way of Mastery. You remain as you were created to be. You were created by the Creator in its likeness and image. So if you just substitute the word call here for this connection to the Creator is the connection to yourself.
Mm. Yeah, I have this urge always to say or do something. I don't have much faith in just being a space of loving allowance and listening. I've got this idea that it's not enough. I have to say the right thing, do something. This is just a big piece of work that needs to be taken care of. And I don't imagine I'm alone in that. It's like becoming totally empty and trusting that that is the best thing, not only a thing.
So here's something written by Jeff Foster. It was posted by somebody I went to graduate school with on Facebook. I'm just going to read this. Title of it is, Let Yourself Rest. If you're exhausted, rest. If you don't feel like starting a new project, don't. If you don't feel the urge to make something new, just rest in the beauty of the old, the familiar, and the known. If you don't feel like talking, stay silent. If you're fed up with the news, turn it off. If you want to postpone something until tomorrow, postpone it. If you want to do nothing, let yourself do nothing today. Feel the fullness of the emptiness, the vastness of the silence, the sheer life in your unproductive moments. Time does not always need to be filled. You are enough simply in your being. The Tao Te Ching has a line where it says, do nothing and nothing is left undone.
I love that. You know, Dr. Tim, that was like getting an infusion. I felt as if you was like a tire pump and you were pumping my heart back up to its normal size. I love that. Thanks.
You're entirely welcome and far more deserving than you yet realize.
Thank you, Dr. Tim. You are a funny guy.
I'm just telling the truth. Just here calling him as I see him. What's that thing about the umpires? One says, you know, there's only balls and strikes, and I call them as I see them. And the other one says, no, I'm an umpire, and there's balls and strikes, and I call them as they are. And the third umpire says, well, the way I see it, there's only pitches until I call them. So you are enough just as you are, whether I think you are or anybody else thinks you are or even you think you are. Yet you can create the experience of not being enough. Because that's what we're given the gift of awareness for, that we get to create our experience. it is okay to slow down. It is okay to do what you would consider nothing based on the cultural prescriptions to accomplish this or that.
Faith and trust.
What and trust?
Faith.
Okay.
F-A-I-T-H. Just like faith and trust are practically the same to me. Like trust. Trust. Yeah. So, Dr. Tim, I guess I'm asking for a sneak preview of what you're going to do next year in the radio show. Have you thought about that? It's none of my business.
I don't know.
But...
I don't know about next year. I do know that this next week I will be here again on tomorrow and Friday. I will not be doing the internet show at all next week. So from 11 to noon next week, there'll be no Mind Shifters Radio. I don't know what Michael and Jeannie are planning to do, but and that next week there won't be support groups. I'm taking that week off.
That's wonderful. What are you going to do?
I'm just going to be with family and friends and not have to worry about the internet show at 11, and I'm not seeing patients because I've learned over the years that no matter how much people beg and plead to have sessions between Christmas and New Year's, only about 5 to 10% of them ever show up. So I'm not going to come into the office and see patients, and so I'm not going to drive into the office just to do the internet show.
Oh, that's great. And are you feeling are there any adjustments and stuff because of this Omicron thing? And we've changed some plans. We're not flying to Florida. We decided to postpone till things settle down a bit, and then we'll visit my daughter.
Well, there aren't really adjustments for me because I have been simply, staying close to home, doing basically nothing but work and being there for my mother and sister, and you know, my mother at 93 and failing, she doesn't need extra exposure. So I don't really need to adjust anything because of Omicron, because I'm not really going out traveling or doing anything anyway.
Yeah.
My activities have been very close to home for quite a while now.
Mm-hmm. Well,
but I do have, quite a few people in my caseload who are either asking to go, through a Zoom or phone call or calling off sessions because they're sick or they have coronavirus, COVID symptoms, or they've been exposed to somebody. So it's just more than ever in the past 2 weeks.
Yep, same here, around here. Right. Oh, I'm glad you're taking a rest. I've not known in all the years I've done the radio show. Haven't heard you doing that, and I think it's a wonderful idea.
Welcome, Jeannie Rice. Heard the keyboard clicking away.
Oh, my apologies. I thought I had it on mute. Thank you.
I was just letting Susan and whoever else is listening know that I will not be here next week. I'll be here tomorrow and Friday, but not next week, and there'll be either
you deserve the
open
vacation.
Airspace or, thank you, and you sent a text asking if I was going to do best ofs, but no, that's a tremendous amount of work to edit those and get them uploaded, and I have a plate full of other responsibilities, so.
I understand.
So you sound like you're feeling better. I'm glad to hear that.
Oh, I feel human today. I mean, there's still little vestiges left, my ribs still hurts, and actually my hips are hurting, which I don't know what that's got to do with it, but yeah, felt human today, and I think Dad will come home either today or tomorrow, so.
All right.
All
well,
good.
I'll remind us all that we come from love, we're made of love, we are love, and everything else is false. Thank you, Susan. have a wonderful show.
Thank you. So welcome, everybody, to the second hour of Mindshifters Radio. Today is Wednesday, December the 22nd, 2021, and our call-in number is 563-999-3581, and press 1, and that puts you into queue to talk to us. We'd love to hear your comments and questions because that makes this your show. So we'll give Michael just a moment to get dialed in, and I'll just direct everybody to the website again, whyagain.org. And Susan got me straightened out on the homepage, so when you type in whyagain.org, it'll actually take you to the homepage. I promised her I would not do anything else on the website until all of the fog had lifted. So invite you to just go there and look around. There's lots of downloads, audios, videos. There's information about the Coptic Conference that's coming up in January. There's also a book study group that is going to start in March, studying the Why Is This Happening to Me Again. And I believe that book study group is based out of England, but they said they have global attendees in it. And so we're excited about that taking place, another way of spreading the information and getting it out to more and more people. And then we have, of course, the monthly membership, the breathing membership, and the codependency interdependence, which is a self-study. And those are all that information is on the website. You can find that. And just invite you to download the app and update it if you haven't already and look at all of the changes that have taken place with the app. We now have not just the two forgiveness worksheets and the commitments, but you can also access the Drag On Clean On game and the events, the schedule of events. There's a more button which will take you to the website, and there's lots of information there. And there's also a button on the radio show. So all of those things can be accessed from the app and on any page within the app. Doesn't matter what you're on, you can click a button and ask a question, and it will send a question to me, and then we will address that on the radio show, and we will respond back with an email letting you know what date and time of the show that we addressed that particular question. And so we're excited about that. That is definitely an upgrade. People, you know, you're working on a worksheet and going right through it, and you come up with a question, you can ask it right there and then keep going with your worksheet. So that is, I think, going to be a big plus for everybody. And, yes, we are feeling human again. Woke up this morning and it was like there's still a few twinges here and there, but I'm actually ready if they call and say, come get your dad. I think that we can handle it now. And so just hold the space that they're doing respiratory therapy and physical therapy with him, and then they're going to send him home with oxygen. And then we've got plenty of help coming. I don't know when they'll start, but they'll have a nurse. They have respiratory therapy, physical therapy, occupational therapy. There'll be at least 4 people a week coming in and working with him. So I'm excited about having that assistance. So thank you all for your continued prayers. And yes, we are feeling much better. Welcome, Michael.
Did you share that this morning when we woke up, we said, oh, it feels so good to feel good when you wake up?
No.
Well, that was impressions this morning for sure. And if you want to watch a really profound, we've been spending the morning on looking at what's our next step, what are we moving in the world now, and get your pen handy or your notepad handy and write down Eva, E-V-A space K-O-R semicolon or colon Eva Kaur semicolon Surviving the Angel of Death. It is a 58-minute presentation. We're at about 50 minutes, and she's totally and completely engaged in talking about the forgiveness process at this point and how powerful it was for her. after she recounts how at 10, she and her twin sister were ripped away from her father and mother who were killed in Auschwitz, and how they were part of experiments that were just beyond comprehensible that any human being could participate. And how at 10 she put in her mind that she was going to survive this no matter what, and she did. Very powerful. And, you know, when you look at the racist mindset that allows that sort of thing to have ever happened on Earth, and sadly it has happened many, many times. And if you take a look at the racist mindset moving in the world today, coming feature, coming to America soon, if we don't wake up and take action. It's time for us to recognize that hate, prejudice, fear in all of its forms are anomalies to the human spirit and create distortions beyond comprehension. Fortunately, if someone gets lost in those energetic patterns, fortunately, the purity of being is still there waiting to crack through no matter what. And this work is about holding the space and providing the tools for people to crack through those kinds of insanities. In any event, very powerful video to watch, and I think a very good reason why each and every person who is concerned about decency in our world needs to stand up beyond the boundaries of their own lives, beyond the boundaries of their own thoughts, beyond the boundaries of their own households, and take actual concrete action toward creating decency in the world. And each person has a different task. Each person has a different skill set. Some of it might be to get in somebody's face and confront them over their hate. Someone else might be nothing more than a silent holding of the space and petition for healing. Whatever your role is, I invite you to be recommitted, to recommit on a new level. Because the coming features, you know, if you have the eyes to see and the ears to hear, the coming features in America and in the world are a repeat of what happened in Nazi Germany just a few short decades ago. It's time for people of integrity and decency to step up and take action. That action might look like holding someone accountable, whatever that entails, and it might be horrific in its appearance. But whatever your part is to play, it might be nothing more than I'm going to do my own work on healing my hostility, my fear, my hatred, my vengeance. One of the stories, this young girl, one of this older woman, she's now in her 80s, she's actually passed now, but one of the stories she tells about how she and her twin sister, there were super highly secretive experiments done with twins, and they injected her with something that made her deathly ill and sent her off to die. She determined she was going to live, and she shares how it was several decades later the first time that she and her sister shared what happened, and that apparently Mengele would do his experiments to kill one of the twins, keep the other one alive, and measure their physiological responses at the moment of their twin's death. And then he would immediately kill the second twin and do an autopsy on both of them to find out how the death of the first one impacted the death of the second one. And that was part of her forgiveness work, was to clean that out of her life and out of her body and out of her mind. And she has lectured all over the world about living a life of a human being. So I like to honor and pay tribute to Eva Kaur, just a most amazing human being. and invite you to, you know, if you sit to watch that, you may have to breathe. Many tears came up for me when you hear of the inhumanity that has been done. And then you take a look around, and if you have the eyes to see and the ears to hear, all of the things that led up to that are happening today in our world. People are avoiding it. People are appeasing it. People are pretending we don't talk about it. We need to talk about it. One of the things Gandhi said, and Gandhi was pretty much single-handedly responsible for getting one of the most abusive empires that ever existed on the planet out of India, and that was Britain. And he said, we must expose the evil. We must. Now, somebody might interpret this work as this is all about love and light and happy. No, it's not. This is about dealing with truth. This is about speaking up in the face of insanity. This is about becoming the space, but at the same time having the courage to step up and confront and address what needs to be addressed so that we can change the dynamic, the direction it's heading. If there had been people in Nazi Germany just a few short decades ago who had seen that, who understood what was happening the way we understand it today and had taken action, it never would have happened, and it never needs to happen again. But it doesn't happen without dedicated, committed people who are willing to step up in the face of insanity and say, no more. And I'm going to turn to why is this happening to me again and what you can do about it. And, you know, what I've just said is exactly about the book. I mean, I might as well be from the book. If we never learn to deal with what's gone before us, then the replicant mind will repeat it. When you learn how to go into your own unconscious and remove that which is of an offensive nature, then you don't have to unconsciously produce the why is this happening to me again experience. If we don't confront the rage, the insanity, basically, if you take a look, the brown shirts of Nazi Germany are alive and well and functioning in full force in America. We need to be able to confront it. We need to be able to do our work around it and inspire the work in the world that's going to change that game. So we're here to hold the space for that. And we're on step 9B. Top of page 173, if you're following along in the book. And we're talking with Richard about the fact that there is this power in us that can assist us, that goes beyond our intellectual understanding and will move in us those things that don't belong. And so at the point where I'm talking with Richard about this, and I offer the thought, in the Aramaic scriptures, the mind was called the great deceiver, who could take any situation and justly pronounce its old realities, and justify projecting its old realities, patterns, and habitual behaviors into whatever happens. The task at hand is to bring love into your mind and heal your tendency to abuse yourself or anyone else. Whatever comes up. Now, you know, let's all be fully aware. There are a million reasons to be vicious and vile and destructive toward many people. And, you know, I've had people over and over and over again over the decades say, well, but Michael, they deserve my rage. And I say, boy, I watch what they did. They sure do deserve your rage. Question is, do you deserve it? Because remember step 7 in the worksheet? I get the original of what I send out. They get the carbon copy. And they may not be home for delivery. But Michael, I'm so enraged. Great. So now what you're telling me is you have deep forgiveness of rage to do. But I'm so sad and aggrieved. Right, so now you've told me you have sadness and grief that you need to work through. then it's time to take up your cross. Remember, Yeshua 2,000 years ago didn't say take up my cross. He said take up your cross. What is it in your life experience, in your genetic history, in your environmental growing up? What is it that you hold in you that when it's resonated, you lose the capacity to function out of a mind connected to love? That's your work at this minute. And we are here to support each and every person on the planet doing that piece of work, whatever it is. And it's unique to each and every one of us. Yes. Oh, man, when you did that, I wanted to reach in and puke so hard on you. So now what am I going to do to heal my puking? But they don't deserve love. You know something? I saw what they did. You're right, they don't. But do you? And if you bring love conscious, active, and present, and bring it into your behavior, your extension of that energy will be the gift that perhaps opens the space for that individual to realize, to make real who they are. And one more ancient hatred will become a variance of love. The ego mind will always prompt vengeance. The ego mind, based in hostility or fear, will never prompt you toward healing. And so it becomes imperative to never, ever again do what it is that you are prompted to do by your mind. Do what it is you want to do, unless it is to bring forward the truth about who you are as active present love to function out of that space. So the task at hand, once again, is to bring love into your mind and heal your tendency to abuse yourself or anyone else, whatever comes up. Do you see how the mind sets a trap? It is urgent in any healing circumstance to have a law by which you act, a guidepost for decisions and behavior, or you will tend to fall into the trap of the mind. See, to do what you feel like doing means you're going to get to live in that trap forever. You make a choice as to how you are going to behave in given circumstances that you may find yourself experiencing, and then you do what you've chosen to do rather than what your mind prompts you to do. The law is called the law of love. You can't listen to the advice of an insane mind and make healing decisions. Richard was dismayed. I'm insane right now. I'm just angry at myself, he shot back at me. We call the definition of insanity we discussed earlier. An insane mind is a mind without the condition of love. The first law is to keep that condition in your mind. Whomever you think about, whatever happens. Your focus is on you right now, and you are ready to punish yourself for the error of a child who was in pain. You didn't understand what happened when a new baby came into your home. How could you? I would suggest you go back to step 8 and reconnect your mind to love before you take any other actions. Okay, I really want to get through this. It seems like such a waste the way I've been with my sister for so many years. Great catch. Notice your words. Sounds like another good topic for worksheet. Wasted relationships. It would be a good idea to make a note on that for future worksheets. Have quote-unquote wasted relationships shown up anywhere else in your life? Let me take a minute and get centered in that love connection, Michael. We sat silently for a moment, and Richard's countenance changed. He seemed to settle a little and then spoke. It feels as though every relationship I've ever had was a waste. And I can see that I made the decision very early in that relationships aren't safe. The truth is, I think, that I wasn't safe. I've been so angry ever since I was a child, I'd snap at anybody for what appeared to be no reason. I now clearly see that I was hurting and wasn't going to let anyone get close enough to do it to me again. I can now see that all of my adult trauma and pain has come about as a result of my unwillingness to honestly look at my life, my own blockage of truth. I got it. My life drama is to be emotionally aloof and unavailable, just as described in the Celestine prophecy. It is clear that my attitude guaranteed I would be hurt over and over. The old saying, "There are none so blind as those who will not see," keeps coming to my mind. I've sabotaged my whole life. And sadly, Richard has just described the lot of most everybody on the planet. And there are tools with which to change that whole dynamic. That's what we're here to support. And we're delighted that you're here to be part of the conversation. Miss Jeannie, do we have anybody out there in the phone queue with a hand up or anything happening in the chat room?
We do have a hand up, and I believe it is awesome. Lisa, area code 406. You're on the air.
Hi.
Hey there, young lady. Welcome.
So, the most exciting life.
Yes. I hear you. Would you like to share a little bit about what it is we're going to talk about? Lisa had sent me a text a little bit earlier. And so you want to just kind of lay out what's happening, Lisa?
Yeah. So my former husband sent me a text, and this is the same former husband that sought to get full custody of my children. He did. And he didn't allow me to see my children physically for 11 years. I've seen the youngest boy one time, and I've seen the older boy twice in 11 years. And the second time, those visits have only been in the last 6 months. So it's been a challenging
Ryan.
11 years. So he sent me a text today saying that the younger boy is refusing to get immunized for COVID, and that he is done with him, and that he's not going to fund his education anymore, and he's going to kick him out, and he's going to take the car back, and he's going to do all these things. So to me, immediately, I was triggered, but I also could step outside and say to myself, when people are, he's crying for support. He's asking for support. And
right.
So, but I also, I mean, I'm human. So, and I had that first firing of, look, curse word. It's so funny that he used the exact language that I told him when he was started all this. I said, you're going to bleep things up and you're going to call on me to come in and clean up, pick up the pieces. And he even said
so
that
you got
in
what
his
you asked
text.
For.
Right.
Be careful.
I know, but...
be careful, one, what you ask for, because you're going to get it, and two, and I posted on one of your Facebook posts this morning, be careful what you don't ask for, because you're not going to get it.
Right, right. So,
So it sounds like with the bleeped words, hostility was one of the first things that came up.
Yeah, it was. That was the first thing that fired. But almost immediately, my study of my Aramaic forgiveness kicked in.
Sweet.
Yeah, but I am conflicted, you know. So my initial, I had started calling Kaylee yesterday to try to, you know, wish him a Merry Christmas season, because he doesn't answer texts or anything that I send. So, but then today I did call again. He didn't pick up. So I did send a text, you know, telling him that he's, you know, welcome here anytime, and that he is, sounds like there's a lot of drama going on in his house and he might need a safe space. So, but I am, but the part about Marvin that I feel myself doing is I am not able, he's asking for support, or else
right.
He wouldn't be texting me. And I
and
am
notice that.
Not, and I'm not able to extend, at this second, I am still withholding my support and my being a space of love. I'm withholding the love.
Right. Okay. So it sounds like the first order of business might be, and it sounds like you're already moving in that direction, of restoring that presence of love for your son. So when you tap into and think about your son and he doesn't return your messages and such, what surfaces for you?
Well, for him, I'm actually fine with that. I was actually referring to Marvin, you know, not being able to support him. But
right.
But for Kaylee, I don't have, you know, I don't have much knowing of them anymore. So I don't really know, you know, what. I mean, I'm in contact with them in my sleep, or at least I feel like I am. I don't know.
Right.
But I, you know, I haven't seen them since they were 6 and 7.
Right. So breathing with you around that and supporting you in recognizing that, you know, it's going to be what you do that important here with him and with your former, but primarily with your son. And I would suspect that there might be some difficulty just because of the whole cloud of energy that you hold from relationship with Marvin, and that's going to somewhat tinge the energies and the clarity that you can send to your son.
Yes.
So I would support you in being able to do some worksheets, some forgiveness around this power person dynamic of withholding support. Notice that what Marvin did
yes.
with you as a power person, you know, he had the power in this situation, and certainly I can remember times when it was survival for you. So it's become a power person dynamic. So notice the thing that feels most natural for you to do is what he did to you that he hated, you hated the most, and that was to withhold support.
Right. And he's threatening to do that to my son.
Right. Yeah, that's his game. That's his dynamic. So can
yeah.
you cancel in your mind all of the goals that you hold that would have you doing the same thing to him?
Yes.
And as you do that, knowing that, you know, and I can only imagine, I've had some interaction with your former, so I have some sense of where he lives in terms of his energetic space. And so the interaction with your sons is still in his ballpark primarily. And anything you can do to reach out and offer support to him and getting him back to a space of connected, active love is going to benefit both of your children.
Yes.
And so with wholehearted support, could you send back a text saying, how can I support this healing? Good breath.
I know that it's the right thing to do. Will do it.
Knowing it's the right thing to do and having the energy to do it are two different things. I can only imagine it's going to be a monumental piece of work for you to shine up the parts of your mind that have been tarnished around your relationship with Marvin, so that you can really, with clarity, send that energy truly. So I, for one, am here to hold the space for that cleansing for you to happen, because by, in whatever way it's appropriate, you offering that support, even if it's just a conversation, helps to settle him down in relationship to your son. Your son's going to be the beneficiary of it. And my experience of people with COVID is that some of the basest energetic patterns they have are going to be moving. And so, you know, it wouldn't be a surprise if you reach forward with support to see a swipe come back at you. And are you prepared to breathe and to handle that and move through what comes up?
Well, I won't do it until I'm prepared for whatever the repercussions are, perceiving negative, because I tend to be emotional about this, about the situation.
Yeah. The fact, Lisa, that you can have a little laugh in your voice as you talk about that is a signal of the monumental amount of work you've done. And obviously it's not finished yet.
No. And I know that this is supposed to be, I mean, obviously you have one, it's handed down that you have one, path in life that you're supposed to do, and this might be it, and blah, 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 all that stuff. So I know that this is a monumental task for me, whether it's whether it's just a milestone, but the sooner that I've been withholding the dismantling of my rage and hatred and everything that I'm projecting onto him for this entire 11 years, even after a year at Heartland, I've still been nursing that righteous.
I understand. Yep, I hear you.
And I know that I have to let it go so that I can move forward and become.
So are you going to?
I don't even know. Free.
Are you going to?
Oh. I must. Yes.
Yeah, you must. And recognize and be gentle with yourself. There's a mountain of trauma there. There's a mountain of trauma that was energy that was inflicted in the whole process of both of you arriving where you're at in the world today. There's a mountain of trauma that you've put on yourself with that. And you know, this is challenge time, major, major work to be done, and maybe it's time to be willing to free yourself of all of that.
I'm ready to be free of it from my mind-body unit. I'm ready to
yeah.
You know, because I've been doing so much yoga, and that was actually a beautiful blessing. The text came as I was driving to Bikram, and so, you know, I had
right.
a trigger response, but I was 5 minutes away from the studio.
You're going
so
right into
I got
hot
to
yoga.
The studio.
Well, what a gift.
Right. I got to the studio, I laid my mat down, and I didn't practice very well because I couldn't keep my thoughts. I couldn't stay fully
right.
present, but that, you know, that moving that energy, helping to move that energy
right.
through the body, and then driving home and still not responding, and then reaching out to you for support, and then so I've been doing my best to get back to a space, you know, to hold that love fully present, which is still a challenge.
well, I can only
so
imagine.
That I can do that
right. And I can only imagine, Lisa, that one of the things that's very likely to happen, however you respond, is that, you know, if the pattern continues, you're going to get whacked again. And so probably one of the first worksheets to do is going to be canceling your need for Marvin to treat you with decency.
Yes.
And to make a space for what is likely to be his reaction to come, and that you're able to feel that energy and rather than react to it, act as conscious active present love in response to it. If a higher, you know, piece of feedback comes, wonderful. But the number of times that he has lashed out at you, I would suspect that that would be the first worksheet. And then following that, or hand in hand with that, I suspect, and I might be in error here, that there might be some worksheets on resentment toward your son for him not responding to you when he could.
Yes.
Does that fit?
Both of them. Right, because so my fantasy that I had in my mind, you know, I've never been more than 15 miles from him, you know, living. And they
right.
had cars, they had money, they had cell phones, and they had my number, and they didn't reach out. So then when I reached out to them, and it was condoned by Marvin, you know, he said I could come to the graduation, the high school graduation,
right.
even though Kaylee wasn't 18 yet. He said I could come, so I went, and they came over to my house even, and then every time I said, well, let's get together, you know, I'll bring you some cookies. You know, I thought teenage boys, you know, food, you know, I'll bring you healthy cookies and we can have, you know, we can have lunch. And I only want, you know, we can only have to see each other for a moment. You know, I would send these texts and all the time coming back with polite responses. Oh, I'm just too busy. Oh, I'm just too this. Oh, I'm just too that. And so there, and I have been doing a lot of work around, you know, because I was holding the goal for them that once they were free, quote unquote, that of course they would want to see me. Why wouldn't they want to see me? Well, guess what? They don't want to see
me. How deep? So Lisa, how deep over the last 11 years? And I say this from experience of direct experience of Marvin's state of mind. How deep do you suppose the brainwash has been against you with these two kids?
Yeah, I don't know.
Are you breathing?
I can't even guess. But I will tell you that the one thing that after 11 years, I've kind of worked through some of it where I don't, where I'm not as emotional. But I had
right.
all their books. We used to lay and read their books. So when he moved them from Hawaii to Ohio, I sent all their toys and all their books and beautiful books that had even been Alana's books. And that just triggers me. But he threw them away. And and you know, those are
breathe. Let yourself be with that feeling for a minute. Sounds like there's a huge chunk of grief there to move.
Yeah, it's really, I mean, you know, and then of course the fair comes in. You know, it's not fair that he would do that. You know, he took my children and he gave them to a woman who was an alcoholic, and then she dies, and then he's been raising them by himself.
So guess who gets called on in the most ridiculous of circumstance to keep coming forward as active present love? Is that fair? Not in a million years. But doesn't have anything to do with fair. It's got to do with the healing of your children and the healing of yourself.
And I can feel bone pain in my chest bones.
Yeah, you better get that energy out of there. You better get that forgiven. You don't need that disorder happening. That's your work. So it sounds like life is calling on you on a whole other level to step up to the plate with integrity and as the presence of love. And I got that you see the monumental amount of work that you have to do, and I got your willingness, and I want you to know we're here to support you. Breathing with
you.
Thank
you. And I wanted to write, even though I can say those words to other people and I can hear them, I wanted to make sure and write them down because my unconscious, like most people's, blocks out things. So I've been writing all this down so that after I hang up and then my unconscious tries to wipe this conversation from my mind, I know what the key points are.
Well, and the other thing I would suggest you might do is once you've done some worksheets and cleared some of this energy is make the space for yourself to do a still point session and play this in the background as you're breathing. Replay this show as you breathe. Once you get into your still point session, turn on and just let yourself be the passive receiver of your own voice, your own energy dynamics, and these invitations to open. And if you're in that space and that breath is moving, you'll just move things on a whole other level. And I'll just offer I think back to one of the first times that you breathed at Heartland, and I have never seen anyone so willing to receive pain and not open ever. You hold the record, Lisa. So, and you know, my perception of it, my construct about it, it was just your determination that you're not going to let it touch you. And I'd invite you, if that's accurate, and just check it out, whether or not I'm accurate. It might be my total projection. But if it's accurate, it's time to let it go.
Yeah, I don't.
I'll double check.
Okay. All right.
I'm sure you're on target.
Breathing with you, just breathing with you. I can't fathom. You know, I got to observe firsthand. I got to hear your story. I got to hear Marvin's story, and I've gotten to observe firsthand. And you know, you've got a huge piece of work in front of you, and you're capable of it. You know, I know that you have that kind of determination too. You know, the same strength with which determination you held on, you can use that same determination to open and let go and like be finished with this for your eternal life. Be finished with it. But I would suggest starting with those worksheets around Marvin and what will likely come back from him, and you're canceling your need for him to treat you lovingly, gently, respectfully, fairly, to treat the children that way. And then to clean up some of the resentment about, well, but wait a minute, why, when they had the chance, why didn't they? Each and every one of those goals is to clear out. And, you know, you're going to have to hand them, whether they appear to deserve it or not, the benefit of the doubt. I mean, they were daily programmed by a rageaholic. It's pretty tough for a kid to go through.
I couldn't deal with it. That's why I had to go.
Yeah. I hear you.
But you know what, though? I always say this, though, Michael. If I had to do it over again, I would have stayed.
Yeah.
If I'd known that I would never, that I wouldn't see my children again for 11 years, I'd have sucked it up. And like my mom did, she stayed for 25 years of horrendous abuse. And if I'd have known that I wasn't going to be able to see my children, I'd have stayed.
So now you can acknowledge yourself for having broken the family curse. Now comes the healing. And probably a lot of what's going to come up for healing is going to be the trauma that you received, which is replicated in this relationship and, you know, as you grew into adulthood, but the abuse that you were a part of receiving and observing and absorbing as those decades of abuse went on in your childhood. Now, I don't know, have you ever been on a show where you've heard me talk about the writing of a man named Francis Fenelon? Have you heard me read that at all?
I don't recall.
Well, it'll take me a second to open it here in my phone, but let me just read. This goes back to the 17th century. And it's a piece of writing I came across about maybe 3 or 4 years ago now. And this is a Roman Catholic archbishop around about 1700. And he's writing about the work, not about theology, not about religion, but, you know, what the real work is. And here's what he says. This is writing over 300 years old. As the light increases, we see ourselves to be worse than we thought. We are amazed at our former blindness as we see issuing forth from the depths of our heart a whole swarm of shameful feelings like filthy reptiles crawling from a hidden cave. We never could have believed that we harbored such things, and we stand aghast as we watch them gradually appear. But while our faults diminish, The light by which we see them waxes brighter, and we're filled with horror. Bear in mind for your comfort that we only perceive that malady when the cure begins. So some of what's going to open for you is going to be some of those energetic patterns that instill those power person dynamics in you as you watched what unfolded in your family. And of course, what's in your genes, but what unfolded in the childhoods of the two people who created that in your childhood. And, you know, ultimately, all of that needs to be embraced. I did a still point session back, oh, I don't know, maybe it's 6 or 8 months ago. And as I'm breathing and things are opening, my eyes literally point downward, inwardly. And all I can see is a massive darkness. And there were flecks of light dispersed throughout all of that darkness. And what I was told as I was doing that was that I was looking at the light of my generations, of the individuals in my generations, and the darkness that was surrounding in each and every one of them, and they were uncountable in number. I mean, it was just like an unfathomable number. And it was like the suffering that each of them was carrying. And the request was, I willing to take on and be the space for that energy to be processed from an uncountable number of my own direct relations held inside of me. And it was just, it was like unfathomable. And all I could say was, of course, yes, I will take that energy on. I will be the space for that to be processed. And Lisa, you're coming up against that, the willingness to do that. And I think you're one of the unique individuals that's big enough to do it. Strong enough to do it, powerful enough to do it, insightful enough to do it. And it's not going to be a Dr. Feelgood process.
Well, it is, you know, it is time for it to be off the planet Earth, you know. It's time for all that.
And as the Course in Miracles says, millions yet unborn will benefit from the work you're willing to do.
I mean,
so
I'm
breathing
I'm,
with you. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, because I'm very concerned about the state of our nation and our planet also. You know, aside
it
from
all
what's
ties together.
Happening in the world. Right. And
you know,
so
what's
I'm,
happening in the nation is just a reflection of what's happening in the minds of the people in the nation. That's us.
Yes.
And who's going to clean, like, who's got the tools? Who's got the knowledge that's even there to be cleaned up? Not very many.
And so when I say, when my internal dialogue is, you know, people on the opposite side, why are they acting that crazy? Why don't they just reach out? Why don't they just talk? And so what's the one thing, you know, the advice that you give to other person is it may or may not be true for them, but you know for a fact it's true for you?
Exactly. Exactly. What if I'm the one on the other side that needs someone conscious enough to hold the space of active love? What if it's me in my unconscious that's in need of that? And it is. Breathing with you. And standing in willingness and admiration for the fact that you spent the years that you have jumping in and doing your work on the level that you have, and that you're ready to go to the next level. It's awesome.
Isn't it funny too? I mean, funny, ironic. I mean, no, we're almost at two, but that it happened exactly, you know, on the solstice. I mean, exactly. I mean, it's
energetic patterns.
And so the older son, Ka'imi, it was I sent him a text asking him if he was wrestling, because he had protocols before. He had missed the last home meet. He said, "Yes, I am." He says, "Are you going to come see me?" And I was kind of thinking about going because it was a 3-hour drive, and I said yes. So I drove on Monday 3 hours to see him wrestle 2 3-minute matches and drove 3 hours back. But that was only the second time in 11 years that I've seen him or had contact. And he came and talked to me for about 10 minutes in between the matches.
Absolutely worth it, right?
So it was. It absolutely was.
And I bet you were
so
just standing there so
shifting.
Proudly.
Pardon me?
I bet you were just standing there so proudly watching him.
Yeah, I was trying to sort of, well, anyway, it's a long story, but I had a lot of
to not beam.
Firing.
You were trying to not beam?
Right, right.
Yeah, I hear you. I hear you. Well, you know, times like this were made for people who are willing, and I get your willingness. And you've got our support. You know, you've got a whole community here focusing, holding the space for this huge generational piece of work that you're getting ready to do. It's monumental.
Okay. Well, I appreciate your assistance. And happy holidays.
You've got it. And the same to you too, young lady. We hold the space and that your new year is the best one yet of your eternal life and blessings.
Mahalo.
Aloha.
Mahalo.
Aloha.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with Dr. Michael Rice and myself, Jeannie Rice, and Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet, as we present the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We are here for 2 hours every Monday through Friday from 12 noon to 2 o'clock Eastern Time on Mind Shifters Radio. For more information on Aramaic forgiveness, please visit www.whyagain.org. That's www.whyagain.org.